Are you a chemist?
I am a chemist, yeah.
I'm Matt Davenport, and I am not a chemist. But I can tell you what you're listening to. It's Stereochemistry. More specifically, though, it's me eavesdropping on interviews between scientists and early career science writers. Very early career. I forgot to ask Arthur here just how old he was, but I think it's safe to assume that he has not had any formal journalism training. Still, his questions are fire. Such as,
do you have, like, a smelting machine that can combine two elements together to make another element?
And then there was,
how do you make soap?
How do we make soap?
Yeah.
Our soap was really special. So.
Arthur's interviewing Kyle Bentz, a postdoc in Seth Cohen's lab at the University of California, San Diego. Their get-together is part of an outreach program called Science Storytellers that lets kids interact with real scientists one-on-one to help kids learn firsthand not just what scientists actually do, but how they do it and why it matters. For example, Kyle got his bachelor's in chemistry in 2011, the year after the Deepwater Horizon oil rig exploded in the Gulf of Mexico. The explosion killed 11 people and caused the worst oil spill our oceans have ever seen. Nearly 5 million barrels of oil poured into the Gulf. Kyle went to grad school at the University of Florida and earned his PhD in 2017. His thesis was about next-generation polymers for cleaning up oil spills, or, as he explained them to Arthur, special soaps. Arthur had questions.
What's the difference between, like, those bar soaps and the soaps you just...
The bar soaps.
It was really cool to see this exchange when it happened a few months ago. And it's really fun for me to listen to it now as we close in on the end of the year. You know, the holiday season, when some of us grown-ups are hoping that our jaded hearts will grow three sizes as we're reminded of the innocence and wonderment of youth. I had a chance to talk with Kyle Moore after Arthur finished his interview.
What was the coolest thing about doing the science storytellers about?
Just talking to the kids. I love, like, how excited they are about even, like, just the simplest things, and just, I don't know, they're so inquisitive, and, like, just the questions they ask are, I think they're the questions that we don't ask enough.
In this episode, we're going to dive into science storytellers as a sort of cross-section of scientific outreach. At its core, outreach is about communicating and engaging with folks who aren't in the lab, who aren't running simulations on supercomputing clusters or losing sleep to analyze data. Outreach helps people see how science impacts their lives, for example, in understanding the logic behind certain rules or policies. Outreach also helps bring people into the fold, so maybe they can start to see themselves doing science, or at least better understand why some people feel called to do it. The Science Storytellers event was part of the ACS Kids Zone at the National Meeting of the American Chemical Society in San Diego at the end of August. The ACS publishes CNN, which makes this podcast. At the ACS Kids Zone, there were a bunch of demos for kids and their families, including one that blew my mind where you could make art in a really gnarly way with food coloring and shaving cream. If you want to get a glimpse of what that was like, you should check out live video from the Kids Zone on our Facebook page. We'll also share a link in this episode's description. But Science Storytellers was one activity amongst all this outreach goodness. And so you might be wondering why focus on this particular one. Well, because we work with Science Storytellers to put on events like this, and we're proud to do it. Communicating chemistry is important to CNN, no matter the age of our audience. Science Storytellers helps kids communicate science using the tools of journalism, asking questions, taking notes, and then reporting out what they learn. Those things? Those are literally what we do here. It's a perfect fit. So, on the day of the event, CNN editors and reporters were there helping to set up, direct traffic, and connect kids with scientists. And I was there with my recorder rolling. So what we've got in store for you is more kids talking shop with chemists. We'll take you inside some more conversations like what you heard between Arthur and Kyle to give you a sense of what the program is like. It will be adorable and there will be talk of cyborgs. Then you'll hear from the creator of Science Storytellers, Jenny Cotraro, to learn the story behind it. How did it start? What are its goals? And where can you catch it next? And of course, if you are interested in outreach, you don't need to wait for Science Storytellers to come to your town to go for it. You can try to link up with local schools or an ACS local section to learn more about opportunities, or even just talk to kids you know about what you do and why you do it. Then be sure to let them ask questions. So let's jump back into a Science Storytellers convo. Our interviewer is David, and our researcher is Hava Angel. Hava is a PhD student in Yi Chen's lab at UCSD, where she studies DNA nanotechnology. I'll let David take it from here.
Like, what do you do about DNA?
What do I do about DNA?
Yeah.
So what do you know about DNA first?
I know that everybody has DNA.
Yeah. So everyone has DNA. And DNA can determine what we look like. So what color are your eyes?
Brown.
Brown. So that's your DNA telling your body, hey, my eyes are brown. But DNA comes in four bases. And these four bases are what makes it up.
Hava came prepared for this. She's got four different colored rubber bands, one for each type of base. Then she explains the rules. Going up and down, any color can bind to any color. But left to right, only certain color combinations are allowed.
So in this case, we're going to say that pink binds with green. So let's put those right next to each other on your notebook. Like this, yeah. And purple binds with orange. Exactly. And what we can do is we can put our purple and orange right underneath it. And that's a DNA strand. It's cool, right? And what I do is I actually design DNA sequences.
What is like a green and green?
Those can't bind that way. Now the green and the green could bind this way, long ways, but green can only bind to a pink.
Oh. What if like this?
David's onto something. He builds this up on what Hava showed him. Green to pink,
and
orange to purple.
And like this.
Boom.
That's a sequence. You just built your own DNA sequence.
Yes?
Exactly.
How interesting.
Yeah. So what other questions do you have for me? I can answer stuff about DNA.
When did you start this?
When did I start working with DNA?
Yeah.
About 5 years ago, I started my PhD.
But the thing is that 5 years ago, how old are you?
Oh!
5 years ago, I was starting my career as a science writer, and I had a chance to meet a reporter for the news section of the journal Nature. I remember him describing what they looked for in writers, and he said, "We want reporters who are fearless." What I'm getting at here is that I think David could work for Nature. Fearlessness aside, his interview with Hava was pretty representative of what I heard at Science Storytellers. In broad strokes, the kids would start out by asking scientists what they worked on. The scientists would have an answer prepared for that part. But then the kids would just go wherever their curiosity took them, and the scientists followed them into that uncharted territory. But it was actually Fernando Soto, one of the scientists, who took the day where I least expected, and I just have to share that. Fernando is a PhD student working on micro and nanorobots in Joseph Wong's lab at UCSD. In a recent paper, Fernando made what he calls rotabots. Rotabot is derived from rotifers, which are these blobby microscopic animals that live in the water. The bot part of rotabot comes from the fact that Fernando has loaded them up with engineered microbeads, little chemical machines that don't hurt the rotifer, but can pull heavy metals and other contaminants out of the water as the rotabot swims around. He was telling this to his interviewer, Olin, describing a rotabot as a kind of cyborg. That's when Fernando posed what might be my most favorite question ever. If you had to pick one animal to make a cyborg, what would it be?
A hedgehog.
A what?
A hedgehog.
Yeah, you can make it run very fast, like a sonic head. Very cool. Yeah, I would like to use a raccoon because, you know, raccoons have very sensitive hands.
3 months later, and I still can't decide which animal I'd pick. Probably something from the cat family, maybe an ocelot or an ocebat. Anyhow, back to Science Storytellers. You've just heard the kids kill the interviews. What about the reporting out? Well, they were awesome at that part too. You're about to hear from Isla, who's been talking with Jin Kwan Yu of Scripps Research. He's an organic chemist and his team is studying CH activation. I'll try to set this up without stealing Isla's thunder, but the idea is you start with inexpensive, long hydrocarbon chains, like the ones in soap molecules. Then you use a metal catalyst to activate CH bonds and turn them into carbon-carbon bonds to make an even more useful molecule.
First it was so that it could wash your hands and it could be like washing the dirt off your
That's
hands.
That's right. Still this useful. This washes the dirt off, you know?
But then, if you could just introduce those two together,
the two carbons,
then it could
make medicine.
Yeah.
That's crazy.
That's crazy. You see, you get it. If it's not crazy, it's not new, that's not a science, you know? You know, you get the point. You really get the point.
You might be picking up on how excited Jin Kuan Yu was to be part of Science Storytellers. To be fair, all of the scientists seemed to have a blast with it, but particularly Jin Kuan. I learned that part of this was because he grew up in a remote village in China, and he says he doesn't remember actually doing a science experiment until high school. So he was genuinely jazzed to be in the ACS Kid Zone, seeing children getting hands-on experiences with science at a much younger age than he had. And another part of his excitement was getting to talk one-on-one with the kids. You could tell he took a lot away from that interaction.
You seem very excited.
Yeah, because I was surprised at what they come out of their mouths, what they ask me. Exceeded my expectations, honestly. I'm impressed with some of the kids. They can describe what you have taught them in 10 minutes in the two sentences, more accurate than me. I was very impressed. And even some of them are also very interested in how science can help society. That's like a social consciousness, you know, responsibility. That side, I'm also impressed.
We're going to take a quick break. When we come back, we're going to hear about the philosophy of Science Storytellers from its creator, as well as the editor that got CNN involved in the program. Stay tuned. Well, hello there. It's still me, Matt. I just wanted to take a break from the episode really quick to tell you about a super awesome webinar that will be coming your way on Wednesday, December 4th at 2 p.m. Eastern. Lauren Wolf, the fearless leader of CNN's science coverage team, will be hosting a look back at our favorite chemistry breakthroughs from 2019. She'll be joined by a panel of very special guests who will also be predicting what the big scientific achievements of 2020 are going to be. It's going to be a ton of fun and you don't want to miss it. So, again, mark your calendars for December 4th at 2 p.m. Eastern. And stay tuned to our website, cen.acs.org, for more details. Or, better yet, sign up for our newsletter. That way, you'll get the latest chemistry news and goings-on delivered right to your inbox. Sign up today at cenm.ag/newsletter. All right, back to the show.
Science Storytellers, we held our first event in Boston in 2017, and the program itself came to light just the fall before as an idea that I'd had simmering around in my mind for a while about how to better engage kids with science. And we're going into our fourth year of running this event at science conferences.
That is Jenny Cotraro, a science writer and the creator of Science Storytellers. That first Boston event was at the annual meeting of the American Association for the Advancement of Science, or AAAS. You'll hear that abbreviation again later. Jenny and I caught up on the phone after the ACS conference in San Diego this fall.
I don't know the best way to describe Science Storytellers. Because
it's easy to say what it is, right? It's kids have the opportunity to interact directly with scientists, interviewing them one-on-one. But I also feel like that doesn't do it justice, right? The experience is just so much more than that. I'm curious, Jenny, like when people ask you, what is Science Storytellers? How do you explain it?
That is a great question. So, you know, in part, I explain it the way that you just did, that it's a program that gives kids a chance to sit down and interview scientists the way that a professional journalist would interview a scientist if working on a story. But going a little bit below the surface, this program also is meant to break down barriers between scientists and the public and to help not just kids have an opportunity to talk with scientists, but also to give scientists a chance to really engage on a more personal level with an audience of people who may not be scientists themselves. So they gain their own benefits from this program in that way, too.
Also on the line was CNDN's very own Jessica Marshall, the editor who forged our partnership with Science Storytellers.
I was at the first AAAS meeting where Jenny brought Science Storytellers. And your phrasing is just right, Matt. Like, the description just doesn't do it justice. I thought, oh, that sounds kind of neat. But then when you go and you see the looks on the faces of the kids and the scientists in sort of pure delight and pure engagement, and just completely gaining from interacting with each other. You know, each learning from the other. The scientists are so surprised by the kids' questions. The kids are so happy to just get to ask whatever they want, and they're so interested in what they're doing. Their notes are super cute, what they're writing down. And I just thought that I was totally blown away by what the actual experience was. And it just seemed like the kind of thing that CNN and ACS might also really like to be a part of.
Yeah, I think one of my favorite memories from the Science Storytellers event was walking around and seeing the notes that the kids were taking during the interview with the scientists. The best one, I didn't see it, but Lisa Jarvis, one of our other reporters who was there, came up to me and she said, there's a kid taking a note right there. And it just says, did not know that. So that was the cutest thing. Have there been any experiences from the last several years of doing Science Storytellers that stick out to you as your favorites or maybe most memorable?
Sure. I think the program starts out with us giving kids a reporter's notebook and a little sticky note with a bulleted list of questions that a journalist might ask of a scientist. There are things like, you know, what is your research all about? Why is this important? Why are you interested in this? And our second year into it, we added another question, and that question was, have you ever been wrong? And that year, almost every response that we got back from kids on an exit sheet that they give us, every single kid wrote on their form, I was surprised to discover that scientists can be wrong, that they can make mistakes. One of them said, I was surprised to discover that you blew up your lab one time. Which I wish I had been listening in on that conversation. And that may sound like a little thing, but I think that is so important to get across to kids, that scientists don't just do an experiment and have an answer. You know, they learn by trial and error. There's so much messiness around science. And I think for them, it was really eye-opening. And the scientists that I spoke to afterwards also really enjoyed being asked that question, because they don't often get to talk about that. That to me really speaks to a couple of things. And one of them is, you know, it's probably time to take a deeper look at how we're teaching science to young kids. And if they're, you know, coming away with the idea that science is a bunch of facts and that scientists are always right, somehow we're missing the mark there. So I think that's a bit of a red flag. And, you know, even for adult audiences, I think that can be somewhat of a surprise as well. And it's a difficult thing to talk about, you know, uncertainty in science and mistakes. And that's, I think, an area that's really ripe for, you know, more research into perceptions about science and where they, you know, where they start up. Where do kids start thinking that you can't make a mistake in science lab, or science is just about following basically a recipe for an experiment?
So, Jessica, I mean, is there one memory that sticks out from your involvement?
Yeah, more than any specific thing, it's just that, like, it's this great visual to see the scientist sitting next to this kid with their notebook, and just such equal voices in that conversation. Just being able to, you know, the scientist taking the kid's questions just as seriously as if it were an actual reporter sitting right there. And just that interaction is amazing.
And that's really intentional on our part too. You know, we really want to give kids some agency and the feeling that they're being heard, and we're letting them lead the way kind of on purpose. It gives them just a little bit of a sense of power.
One of the things that really impressed me in San Diego was how much the kids knew about science and how much they wanted to share that. But I've only been a parent for 2 years. Jenny and Jessica have both been parenting for longer, so I wanted to ask for their takes too. Is this something that your kids do? Like, is that just kids being kids?
Totally. I mean, I think kids, especially if they already have some knowledge about something, they love to share that. And when you give them an audience that's a scientist and they can share their science knowledge, they'll run.
Yeah, they're so locked in when they're learning. Like, their attention is just locked. When it's satisfying their curiosity, it stays with them, I feel like. We had this thing, we were at the dinner table the other night, and we were talking about somehow like atoms and molecules, protons, electrons, whatever. And we're like, yeah, and the different atoms, they have different things. And like carbon wants to make 4 bonds and oxygen wants to make 2 and hydrogen wants to make 1. And so next thing you know, they're just like drawing like free form. Like it was like a puzzle, like a logic thing. And so then they would show me these molecules and they're like, does this one work? I was kind of floored by that, how curious they were.
I love that story.
So on the flip side of this, I loved how into it the scientists are too. They're there for it, right? Like wherever the conversation goes, they're with the kid.
They really do engage on a very personal level. And I have had some scientists afterwards approach me to say, you know, and this was especially true of, you know, earlier career scientists, PhD students, postdocs, that this is one of the first times during an outreach event that they've had a chance to talk about their own specific research. You know, it's not that they're, you know, partnering with their university's outreach team to run a demo or, you know, to give a talk about a topic. It's, you know, really kind of sometimes getting kind of into the weeds about what it is that they study. And I think that's part of that engagement.
I don't know if this is totally true, but I have the sense that maybe some of the scientist volunteers come in assuming that it's going to be a little more of that kind of traditional interaction of like, I'm here telling you what I do. And so I think maybe they're also sort of inspired and refreshed by what a conversation it is and how much the kids bring to it.
So any plans for the next one, like for folks listening, is there something they can look forward to?
I don't think we have planned for sure for our next ACS iteration. We'll hope that we can be back again, but it's also coming to Seattle in February, right, Jenny, for AAAS?
AAAS is, yeah. I have a feeling that there are some CNN editors who already may be facilitating some of these conversations at the booth once again. I'm very excited to have them there.
Yes, I live in Seattle, and so I plan to be a volunteer at the Science Storytellers event at AAAS in February, which will be a lovely way to spend a day.
If you are a scientist or a science writer who would like to be involved with Science Storytellers this February in Seattle, drop Jenny a line at jenny@sciencestorytellers.org. That's Jenny with a Y at sciencestorytellers.org. You can also follow Science Storytellers on Facebook and Twitter. Before we sign off, we wanted to extend a huge thanks to the Fleet Science Center in San Diego for sharing their amazing venue with us, and to ACS's Office of External Affairs and Communications, which helped fund CNN's partnership with Science Storytellers in San Diego. And lastly, but not leastly, thank you to all the wonderful volunteers who helped at the ACS Kid Zone, including the Science Storytellers scientists, Hava Angel, Kyle Bentz, Daryl Boyd, Gary Suzdak, Fernando Soto, Audrey Velasco Hogan, and Jin Kwan Yu. This episode was written and produced by me, Matt Davenport. Stereochemistry is edited by Lauren Wolf and Amanda Yarnell. Our fantastic copy editor is Sabrina Ashwell. Now, let's talk about music. In today's episode, you heard Stomp and Oasis by Rex Banner, as well as Here We Go Again by Jake Bradford Sharp and Cold by Anthony Lazzaro. We'll be back in December with another brand new episode, and with a little luck, maybe an Asabot. Thanks for listening.